Hello, friends and brothers. This is Justin Jones with Masonic Imprimit. I am joined here with my co-host, Brother Dennis Yates, and Curtis Jones. Hello,
Can't
hello, hello, Curtis.
steal that from you, Dennis.
Hello, Curtis.
Brother
Hello, Dennis.
Jones. It's an
So,
honor to be here.
for those that haven't made the connection, Curtis Jones, I know Jones is a very common name. But he is my father. So Curtis Jones is my dad. Dun,
At
dun,
least that's what his
dun.
mother says. At
Well,
least that's what his mother says.
that's what the papers say too. So we're gonna
Right.
leave it at that.
So, Dad, why don't you
Right.
tell us? Let's just hop into it. Tell us about your don't we're not going into why you joined or anything yet. Just tell us a little bit about your Masonic background.
Masonic background is that I really can't do that without telling you why I joined.
Well, just talk about how long ago you joined and where you
Oh, I've been a
Freemason.
Freemason for 30 years. For the first 12 years, I'm going to tell you guys something, okay? In Freemasonry, so often when you have an entered apprentice and fellowcraft and a master, you want them to rush through m their memory work, okay? And at the end, there's no confetti, there's no fireworks, there's no, it just peters out. So when I was rushed through, because there's some imaginary who can get through this memory work the fastest thing, I was disenfranchised. And I didn't attend a meeting for 12 years until Justin and my brother decided that they wanted to petition the launch. And that's been 18.25 years now. And it's probably one of the better things, obviously one of the greater groups I've ever been a part of. The men involved in Freemasonry are phenomenal. Of course, you, like any group, you're going to get one who slips through the cracks, that's going to wear the Masonic hat and be in public using profanities. And that bad apple will spoil the whole bunch in the public view. But my history is that once Justin and my brother showed interest and were initiated, I had to double down and learn my work, learn the work. So I could, is this light bothering you guys?
No.
So that I could teach them. And luckily, fortunately, I had one of the greatest men in my lives, Justin's granddad. My dad-in-law was a Freemason, and the reason that I became one. But he, even at 80 years old, could remember, all the questions and answers and all the everything, and if you questioned him, he had some big old bushy eyebrows that looked like caterpillars. And boy, they would meet in the middle of saying, in a deep voice, "Boy, I'm telling you, that ain't right," But
Nice.
and then, helping them through their work, and even after they were raised, helping them through their master work, really encouraged me to start working with others as they were coming through. And it was just unbelievable how fast some of these guys could recall the memory work. But my speech to them was slow down. You get out of Freemasonry what you put into it. And if you zip past here, You zip through this memory stuff, you're not gonna get anything out of it. But I promise you that the ones who did that, I haven't seen. I haven't seen them back in lodge.
The ones that rushed.
Yeah, the ones who rushed through, I haven't seen them.
Yeah.
They got nothing from it, you know. And Justin, when the first time I was worship minister, you were putting on classes in the lodge, you know, to instruct people, the brethren, and what it meant to be a Mason, not a member. We don't need members. We need Masons in our lodges. And you would go through so much education and instruct these guys. And you know, for some that was useful, and for others, Dennis, you know, you could line the checkered pavement with gold, and they still wouldn't show up.
Yep.
But I since pursued my the certificate training, and I have had a certificate for I don't know how long. I probably won't renew it now. My second time as worshipful master, and you know, it's an honor for me to be a member of this honorable fraternity.
Nice. You have any thoughts, Dennis?
So, yeah, you unpacked a lot right there. There's so many things that we could touch on. But I'm really interested to know your caterpillar eyebrow father-in-law. What about him intrigued you and made you want to actually join Freemasonry in the first place? What?
Oh, Dennis, if you had ever met the man, you'd love him. He was just that kind of guy that you knew that he was not going to lead you wrong, and you knew that he had a faith in a higher being. And you know, he wasn't baptized, he was like 90. But you know, just his character, you know, and he would say that in the old days, you know, being a Mason, if you got arrested for being drunk, you're gone. If you beat your wife, you're gone, you know. Anything that caused the public to look upon the fraternity in a negative light, you were gone. Gone. History. And he was just such an important man in my life. I knew him actually longer than I knew my own dad. But he was just that kind of man. The kind that we should all strive to be, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of proves the point to the reason I had joined. One of the reasons I had joined was because I knew that my grandfather could go to any bank and get a loan for any amount of money just on his word because he was a master mason. He was a 32nd degree mason. And back in those days, that was the thing. That was a real thing. And it's because if you were held in such high regard that your word meant so much that you wouldn't let anyone down, not just your family, but anyone. You wouldn't let anybody down in your community. And so that was one of the things that attracted me, to be honest, that the just the feeling of dignity and honor that came with that position in life and that came with that apron.
Yeah.
People took it very seriously back then, and that was part of it. So I get it. I totally get it. I
What's
had a brother that did my lectures when during my degrees, all of my degrees, he did all the lectures. And man, he had just the deepest, most sincere voice. He still has it. It's Bobby McKee. He used to be up in McKinney. He's over in East Texas somewhere now. I can't remember right off the top of my head, but old Bobby, he would talk like this, except it was a lot deeper, and you just felt the warmth from his soul every time he talked to you. And when you heard that lecture, you knew that he believed every bit of it, and that he truly did feel it was an honor to give it to you the way that he received it. And so I get it. I totally get it. What were you going to say, yeah, Justin?
What's cool about our lodge is my granddad, my dad, and myself were all raised in that lodge, and we were all past masters of that lodge. So it's just cool to me to have, it's cool enough just to have a family legacy, right? Well, you got like my granddad was a Mason. A lot of people don't know where their granddad was a Mason or something like that. I know where he was. I know where he got his degrees. It's not the same building, but it's the same spot. That he got it, my dad got it, I got it. Hopefully one or both of my sons will have it there, and just continue that lineage. So I always thought that was really cool.
You know, kind of what you were talking about, Dennis, you know, the kind of the history, you know, the nostalgia, you know, family ties type thing, and a brother being able to keep a secret, you know. And a lot of times, you know, people talk about the Freemasons who were involved in the American Revolution and the Civil War and first one thing and another. And, you know, and then creating the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and everything that actually formed this country. And, you know, the thing is, these guys knew how to keep a secret. You know, it's not that we're a secret fraternity, but we darn well know how to keep a secret. You know, and these guys, it was their lives were in danger during the American Revolution. And if you had a group of people that were formed together for a common goal, who would you want in there? Somebody you could trust? Somebody who you knew could keep a secret? Or, you know, somebody else?
Just anybody that walks in the door. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, the Freemasons are essential in the forming of this country, well, us and God. But the reason behind it is, like I say, we're a family. We're a fraternity. And we're not going to accidentally spill some kind of secret that could cause anybody harm or defame them either, you know? So,
how did the, and you kind of hinted at this a little bit earlier, how did the reality of Freemasonry compare with your expectations?
Oh, it didn't. Not at all. I didn't really know what to expect of Freemasonry. You know, like say your granddad was, staying that on me to stay with it, you know, because the guy that I was working with, Bobby Lay, every night he would show up and get in my patrol car and we'd drive around and he would, you know, do the work with me. And I expected at the culmination to be, you know, to have some kind of, you know, terrestrial knowledge or something, you know, and at the end it was like, well, congratulations,
now on to the next one.
Not even a cake.
you're Master Mason now. Okay, what does that mean? I don't know. You get to come to meetings. And you know, it really it took you and your uncle to get me back involved in the fraternity. And yeah, I thank you for that. Even though I have a little bitterness in my heart right now toward our district, but you know, I just had to work that out on my own.
Yeah. Go more into those expectations though. I mean, what were you expecting?
Yeah, I really don't know. Obviously, Freemasons aren't going to tell you what to expect. You know, that's the secret squirrel stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea of what to expect. All I know is that once I turned in my work at the conclusion, there was nothing there for me. And that's because, well, what the, you know, I'm gonna lay it out there. If you have somebody in your district who only has, well, let me back up. They're new to the fraternity, okay, and they come in and they say, oh, great, you know, I can start learning the work and start going through the lineup, going through the chairs and working my way up to Worshipful Master. You know, they have a goal, right? Something to look forward to. But you've got to give them a reason to do that. You know, you can't say, well, we're having floor school tonight, but you're at EA, so you can't come. Well, I'm sorry. I thought that's what it was for. To teach whoever shows up whatever they want to learn. As well as if within your district, there's district positions, five or six different district positions, and all but two are held by one guy. Well, what does that give you to shoot for? You know, being a district instructor, no disrespect, son, but it's kind of like being appointed to the Supreme Court. Nobody else can get it until the other guy dies. You know? So, you know, I have a little heartburn there. Yeah. But all in all, it's still the greatest fraternity I've ever belonged to.
I'll point out, like, you talked about the receiving a master's and everything. And you and I haven't talked about it, but Dennis and I have talked about it. On average, it's like 200 man hours from the time you start your work to the time you turn it in, right? That's the time it takes to sit down with somebody, memorize everything, turn it in, so on. That's quite a bit of time. And then, I mean, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of time. And then it's very anticlimactic. You turn in your work and you get a pat on the back and that's it. Like I joke, like, no cake, right? But mm-hmm. I mean, really, why no cake? Why yeah. Nothing at all to celebrate this? We tell them it's a big deal. We tell them it's important, and then we don't act like it once he's finished. I mean, we should be welcoming him in as a master mason by the time once he finishes turning in all this work. So that's definitely something that maybe myself, but all of us should probably reevaluate. If we tell someone it's something, if we tell someone they're doing something important, but our body language and our actions say otherwise, what are they going to think? Right? They're going to go with the subtle indications more than what you're just saying, right? Because what you say is one thing, but how you act, that's what people really believe. So if you say, "Hey, congratulations! It's really good. It's really important to turn in this work. You're a full master mason, whatever that means, but you turned it in, you're fully a member. Here's your dues card. See you next meeting," right?
Yeah, here's your dues card. Yeah, by the way, next month, give me $200 for your dues.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. One of the – go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
One of the things that I've always been a proponent for, and which is really probably going to take off a lot more than what we expect pretty soon now that we have Resolution 9 under our belt. But one of the things I've been a strong proponent of is doing the degrees and then afterwards having a dinner, mm-hmm. a celebration dinner, and answering questions that brother may have, giving the opportunity to really just take it all in, experience it, hash through it right then while it's fresh, and even have somebody give a presentation on on one of the working tools or whatever of that degree, or all three of them if you want to, or all of them if you want to, whatever degree it is. I think that would be an excellent opportunity that we are skipping out on to add value to the process of the degrees. I really do. And now it seems like with the new resolution, we could actually have festive boards at the end and really do it up nicely and make it a real lively celebration.
Before the degree, you know, the
not too lively.
The candidate's nervous. Everyone's trying to remember everything that they're going to do during the degree. It's just, I mean, you have dinner and it's fun, but I agree. Like just get there a little earlier. Just do the degree. We'll have something to look forward to, because otherwise everyone just leaves, right? You got this guy, you just force fed water to him through a water fire hose, right? Like he's just like, I mean, his mind is racing. He can't even remember what happened. And then you pat him on the back, send him home, right? Do the degree earlier than you normally would. Then have a nice meal, not like hot dogs or something, but have a nice meal that's worth looking forward to, and answer his questions. And if your lodge if it allows the alcohol, have some toasts and things. Get them to understand the camaraderie, the fellowship that we can have. Do some toasts to him, right? But
well, that's and yeah, that's fun. That's the lively aspect that I meant. Mm-hmm.
Do the
having toasts and toast to him. Toast to the past masters, toast to the, the fallen brothers, and really make it a special occasion.
What's that song? I think you're going to send it to me. It's that song they do at the end. It was in England where they chained their arms.
Yeah.
Like get them doing that. Like this is your chance to really, I hate to say indoctrinate, right? But really introduce him to the culture of your lodge. And the culture of the fraternity, right? Because now he's a Mason. As soon as he gets that EA degree, he's a Mason. Like, let's actually start teaching him what we're about and how we're supposed to act towards one another.
Yeah, the thing is though that because the culture of our lodges really is not about teaching people beyond their work. As soon as they turn in their work, we start trying to coerce them into York Rite. Or Scottish Rite or something like that, rather than spending quality time with them to teach them the meaning of what they've gone through, you know. And every lodge has great ideas. Well, I shouldn't say every lodge, but most lodges have great ideas.
Take it down the road right now.
As things that they could implement. Like you were saying, Dennis, you know, Resolution 9 has passed, so you know there's opportunities available there, and I think now more than ever in our fraternity that we would have greater support from the Grand Lodge as far as flexibility on what we want to do, but. Of course, everything needs to go by Grand Secretary. You know, that's why we elected him.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of good ideas out there, and we're all like, "Well, this is my idea. I don't want to share it with anybody because they think it's dumb or they want to take credit for it later on." Who cares? If it's a good idea, let's do it.
Okay. Yeah, that's something that Justin and I have been talking about a lot lately. Is the fact that we're in a position this year to really express our ideas and be able to embrace a shift in the culture of our lodges. So we can, now is the time, if we're ever going to do it, to really throw in that extra education, that extra esoteric work to fill in, you know, the blanks that come with the catechism, and then, you know, have the nice events to where we can talk real Freemasonry, you know, whatever we decide to talk on, in the privacy of our own lodges and still be able to celebrate and have our toasts and all that kind of stuff. I think that we really have an opportunity that we haven't had in many years. And we just got to make sure we don't waste it, because you're right. People do hold on to these things thinking, well, we'll do this in my year, or you know, I don't want to tell the worshipful master, because that's something that I want to bring up when I become worshipful master. And that happens even in the grand line. You know, they do the same thing. They keep everything close to their chest. But really, we ought to be focused on the betterment of the fraternity. And now is the time to be able to express what that betterment could be and really have those talks with our brothers openly and honestly, and figure out what we really want from our lodges. You know, I really think we're in that time. I think this is our era. This is our moment, and we got to get it right.
I agree with you. Yeah, I've never seen the energy at Grand Lodge that I saw this past Grand Lodge. And I'm just saying that, you know, now's the time, while the metal's still moldable, you know, to work this into a fine edge. And let's do what's right for the fraternity, and let's do what's right for the Masons who come in. Almost said members, but we don't need members. We need Masons. Right. You know, instead of just teaching them their memory work, we've got to teach them the meaning of that work.
Yes.
And my philosophy has always been, you know, you have a year to turn in your EA. I don't want you to do it in a year. I'll get you some extra time if you need it, you know. But I want you to understand what you're getting into before you go to another degree. In the same way with fellowcraft. I mean, once you've done the EA, you know, most people, the first time they set for the fellowcraft, they're ready to turn it in. But no, wait the 2 weeks. And if you can, right, you know, try to squeeze a little bit more time in there, and so that they understand what they're doing. And of course, the masters, woo, there you go. You know,
I was talking to a lodge last weekend, and they're asking, like, how can we incorporate education better into the lodge? And we talked quite a bit about it, but really, what I said, one of the big things is you gotta bake it into the culture of your lodge. As a worshipful master, you could request education, right? You could set things up, but if it's not in the culture of your lodge, when your year's done, or however long you're there, when you're done, it's not going to, unless the next guy wants education also, it's just not going to happen. And so, one of the suggestions that I said is really the time to really shape your cultures with your newest members, because they're the ones that are, their minds are still, they're still trying to figure out, like, how does this actually work? And so instead of just requiring memory work, have them do a presentation on what, not what they learned as, like, the degree itself, like the stuff you're not supposed to talk about, but how did this shape you? How has this affected you as a person? How has this degree impacted you? Because it does a few things. It gets them in the habit of writing things, right, and giving presentations. But also, we tell men that we make them better through our processes. But if you're not reflecting, there's no improvement. You cannot grow unless you are reflecting. And so this also would encourage them to actually reflect on their journey at each stage. How have I incorporated this into my life? How am I becoming a better man? And that gets them into the cycle of education. And I firmly believe once you write one thing and you start presenting, you overcome that fear, but you also start that cycle. Like, I want to write something else. What else is interesting to me? And it creates these lifelong scholars, and it creates these education programs as these new guys come in and they're presenting things. I mean, by the time someone is a master, they already give three presentations, right? So they're giving presentations, and the cycle just starts that way.
One of the things that I find interesting is that after some particular degrees, you know, the worst master will say, "Brother so-and-so, you've heard us talk for the last hour or so. Now you got 30 minutes to tell us, you know, what this degree has meant to you, what you've learned from it." And right now, the only thing they can think of is they need some clean underwear. You know, they got no serious cognitive thoughts about what they just went through.
Yeah.
But yep, yeah, I guess.
And then the worshipful master thinks he's done his job by giving him that opportunity. You know, when really, you know, we need to be asking them 6 months down the road, okay, now what do you think about it? What have you learned from this? I think you're absolutely right. It's almost pointless to ask them right after, you know, because all they're going to do is say, well, thank you very much. We'll see you on the next tour.
Yeah, and, their brains are zapped. Like,
yeah,
they don't. You have to process what you saw. You can't just talk about it like right after.
I still get that way. I watch the degrees. I don't like to be in them as much. I will if I'm needed to be in any part. I'm happy to jump in, but I prefer to sit on the sidelines and just watch the degrees, take it in, take everything that happens in. And I still get that way. I've got so many thoughts that I wish I had, you know, my notepad with me so that I could start, you know, writing notes for my next presentation. Because it comes to me like that, and I just want to do it. And I get confused in my own thoughts and couldn't formulate all of it if I wanted to, mm-hmm. much less a brand new guy, you know, that's, you know, one way, halfway through it, and then finally gets to see some action in the second half. And you know, how much does he really take in after that experience? Yeah. You know, it's
very little.
Yep.
Besides feeling like his legs are cramping up on.
Yeah.
Dennis, you want to get the next question? Number four?
I'm sorry. I thought we weren't really going to go by questions. I thought this was going to be more organic.
Organic's more expensive, so.
this is organic, free-range, GMO conversation right here.
All right.
Well, you know, you have touched on this a little bit already, or you've alluded to the fact that there's some issues and then, you know, some tensions within different districts and stuff like this. So what do you feel like are the strengths and weaknesses of our Blue Lodge system at this point?
Well, the weaknesses would be the lack of attendance and the lack of leadership. And I can't really correlate the two because as worshipful master, we only have about 8 people that show up and out of 40. And the one of the reasons behind that is that, you know, the nursing home doesn't release them so they can go to lodge. So right. Another weakness we would have would be the fact that our fellow Masons are aging. Well, I am too. I'm not, you know, 21 anymore or anything like that. And you guys will be where I am one day. And
Dennis first.
Well, it's not a race, believe me. You made me lose my thought, Gooberhead. But anyhow,
I agree.
I probably had something really, really good to say.
I know he sucked the profound right out of this segment. You just sucked it right on out. Thank
all
you.
The listeners would have said, wow, they should have had Curtis on a long time ago. He's really,
I know.
You know, like up there. thank you for draining my brain for me. But anyhow, How you doing?
I think there's a lot of a lot of things that we can unpack with just those two thoughts, with, you know, the fact that we are getting older, and even though we like to say that most of them are in the nursing home, that's really not a reality. The reality is that they're just at home because they don't find the value in what we're offering. Yeah. And so I think that that's something that's on us. And again, I hate to go back to the fact that this year is our opportunity, but it really is,
mm-hmm.
To try and figure out what kind of value will bring these brothers back. You know, the Bring the Brother Back program, I really do like it. I don't like the way some of the people had done it, but I do like the program. But I think that instead of just saying, hey, brother, come on back to lodge, let's pick up where you left off. Well, he left the lodge because of where he left off. So yeah. we gotta show up and say, hey, we got these new things going on. I'd love for you to come up and join us and see if this is the kind of stuff you were looking for. Because I think that until we bring the value back into the lodge, mm-hmm. we're not going to get those lost brothers back into the lodge.
If you're offering the exact same experience that he left over.
But what is the value?
The value is exactly what you were saying, the education, more education, so that we can build ourselves intellectually and spiritually, and not just and not just literally, because what we go through is all a literal experience, and what we're seeking inside to fulfill our quest, our rites of passage, are very spiritual and intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think that's where we ought to put some focus in to bring some of these brothers back and say, hey, I'd like for you to run this program. If this is why you didn't show up, I would like you to run this program and help us reestablish this in the lodge.
I would also add, the education's, it's what we do. The education should be what we do, but the fellowship is also important. And I think that the fellowship is a result of what we do, if that makes sense. If you have a lodge with a great education program, but everyone's cold as ice when you go in there, it's still not going to be a healthy lodge. Likewise, if you can have the friendliest lodge there is and no education at all, and it would still you still probably get people, right? But they're just not doing, they're not practicing Freemasonry. So I think you have to have both. I'm not going to name names, but I've talked to people from lodges. Actually from our lodge that we're a member of, and we visited the lodges, and he's like, this place feels so much friendlier than our lodge. Like, these people will hug you, they embrace you, they don't even know who you are, they slap you on the back, like you feel like you are wanted here. And that's the kind of culture we have to have. Like when we're doing business, there is education, but when we're out there with our brothers, we treat them like brothers, right? Like that. It's not just a word, right? We could just say hello, Member Jones, Member Yates, right? We need to treat each other like members. We call each other brother. We're family. So when you see them, that's that brother you haven't seen for several days, or that's your brother you've known for several years. I mean, think of like Jimmy, Dad. He taught. Between you and Jimmy and my granddad, that's where I got all my work. And Jimmy retaught you a lot of the work. And Jimmy, so my point is, like, that's a guy, like, I've been a Mason for 8.25 years. I've known Jimmy, not 18.25 years. I've known Jimmy for almost half my life, right? And he's been my brother. He's family. That's my brother. It should be more than just a loose handshake when we see these guys. Like, it should be like, we're family, and we gotta bake that into the culture. We gotta let people know when they come in that door, regardless of what lodge they're from, regardless of how we feel about district issues or anything like that, they're brothers. They're a brother. And we need to treat them. We need to embrace them. Like, we may have some, we there's some, and don't get me wrong, there's some members, right, that leave a bad taste in their mouth, right, just because of past experiences. I'm not saying like you got to go and kiss them on the ear or anything like that, but
you said ear, right?
The ear, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think we have to have, well, let me go, like, I'll go this way. You know what the happiest animal is in the animal kingdom? It's a goldfish. Why? Because they have the shortest memory. And I think sometimes we have to be like a goldfish, right? As far as forgiveness goes, forgive, have short memory, and forgive, but don't necessarily forget, if that makes sense.
Well,
you would have been much.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, you also got to consider that you have to be careful what you tolerate, because you're showing people how they can treat you.
No, I know. I'm not saying tolerate. Like you were talking about Granddad earlier, like having these high expectations of like, this is the bar, and this is what you have to meet. And if you come down here, there's consequences. Like, we're going to have serious conversations about if you should even be a Mason at some point. But here's the bar. I'm not saying lower that bar, but I'm saying, I don't know. I think I like forgive, but don't forget. Right. But also, going back to the analogy of the goldfish, the whole thing was, it was some video I saw. It was supposed to be inspirational, but you didn't get inspired.
If you weren't a millennial, you would have just quoted the late great Ronald Reagan and said, "Trust but verify."
Trust but verify.
And that would have made everything all right. Verify. Everybody would have been happy.
We'll go with that.
You're right. Justin's, what you were saying. Justin's analogy about a goldfish, I didn't find Finding Nemo very inspirational.
Be like a goldfish. Trust but verify. There you go.
You got a ring in that goldfish.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I was thinking about while you were talking through that whole thing, while you were unpacking, I was thinking about the presentation I gave last night. And there's a degree, not one of the ones that you'll go through in Blue Lodge, but there is a extended degree that references the chisel as well, and that chisel represents, and this is written so I can say it, the chisel represents education
it's written, Dennis, what's the problem?
Basically, well, I don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
Education and principle, and principles, basically. And which are kind of cold subjects, you know, just like a chisel, it's cold. But, you know, all the chisels that I've ever seen in life, they were all a pentagon-shaped handheld tool to where you could grip it better. So for me, in my mind, I think about the exact thing that we do need the education and we need the strict principles to live by, all the tenets and the precepts that we learn in Masonry. But with all that education and understanding, if it weren't for those 5 points, then we wouldn't be able to hold on to what we have. We can learn all the education we want to, and y'all know what 5 points I'm talking about. If we can learn all the education that we want to, and we can learn all the rules and regulations to get us through life, and to get us in the fraternity, get us through the fraternity, and to teach our brothers and all this. But if we can't hold it all together with the firm grip of the 5 points, then it's all for nothing. That fellowship is more important than anybody realizes when it comes to embedding that education into your lodge. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've, you know, dug out of. I tried to peel away, you know, from that conversation you were having with yourself, Justin, about the goldfish and all that. I was unpacking something a little bit different. But No, something no, that's more you're insightful. Right. We do have to have a short memory. I try to live that way because I know that I'm imperfect, mm-hmm. and I always say exactly what I'm thinking at that moment. You will not hear me. Yeah, you will not hear me playing a game of chess. I'm playing Chinese checkers, and I'm always going to say exactly what I'm thinking. And in about 5 minutes, I may want to retract that statement and apologize for that. So I hope everybody has the same kind of memory I hope everybody has with me, right? So I try to have that same mentality for others as well, because we're all doing what we think is right at the time. Hopefully.
Well, that's true. And you're right. But, you know, when it comes to the lodge, you were saying earlier, you know, about when you have them there, have the new guys there, or the old guys, either one, you have to make their experience worth coming to. Okay, what it means to me to go to the lodge and work with other people obviously has a different meaning than it would to somebody else. You know, they may be like, well, got to go down, spend an hour with these knuckleheads. You know, me, I'm like, oh, good. You know, I get to go down and hang out with my brothers, watch somebody learn. And hey, if I get a chance, I'm going to get a game of dominoes in there too, you know. And in the old days, when Justin was coming through, that's what we did. For crying out loud, man, we'd have like 10 people working on their memory work. This is no joke. And we'd have me and two other guys. You know, I'd have the masters, and they'd have Feathercraft and the EA, and we'd be going through doing round robins and stuff. And after an hour, after everybody's brains fried, we go play dominoes. And oh my goodness, did we have some games. Nice. Without resolution 9, but we had some games.
Right, right. And you're right. Not everything evolves around being allowed to have alcohol or anything like that. It just adds a different flavor to the mix now. But yeah, no, dominoes is excellent. I don't speak that way. I'm not just 18 years old in my head.
What do you say?
Straight.
What do you say?
Huh? I said no pun intended.
He was talking about me talking about the mix in drinks.
Yeah.
When I said that you have to, you know, now you've done it again. You've taken the wind out of the sails.
Got too many Gen X. Like, got too many Gen Xers in this conversation.
You know, let me tell you something. He's my son, so he's taking the wind out of my sails more than once. Nothing like a knock on the bedroom door, you know. Or not knocking. Yes, son. I hope
you are not allowed to edit that. That is so, that is awesome. Oh man, now the world gets to see why I enjoy talking with Brother Jones better than young Brother Jones.
Well, you know, there's things in life that each of us hold and regard as what's important to us, you know. And for me, the most important is my relationship with Jesus. Okay. Beyond that, my relationship with my wife and my family. There is nothing and nobody on earth today that is more important to me than my wife and my children and grandchildren, and of course my siblings, you know. But with keeping that in mind, you know, when we are representing ourselves as Freemasons, we're not putting on a mask. People are seeing who we are. And if we're wearing a hat, I mean, look, I'm not really Batman, Okay. I'm really not.
Glad we cleared that up.
Yeah. But like you say, Dennis, I want to come across straight, and this is what I'm wanting to say. This is what's on my mind. And I may come back later and regret it, but while I'm saying it, I'm going to do my utmost first to honor God, my family, and my fraternity. And that's just how I look at things. You know, my fraternity, it means that much to me.
Before you ask another question, I just want to, were you gonna reply to your dad?
I hadn't decided yet.
Well, let me take the win from your sails.
Okay.
That, you know, in my opinion, that's one of the most important things that we need to consider when we're talking to that new potential Mason. That, you know, we're not looking for members. So when he walks in the door, we're not going to throw a petition at him. We're going to talk with him, and we're going to get to know him and make sure that those are the kind of priorities that he has before he becomes a Mason, and not something that we are going to try to develop in him as a Mason. Because, you know, there are certain core principles that people have that are already in alignment with Masonry. I mean, we say it pretty clearly, you know, where when I first became a Mason, it wasn't, you know, at the door of the lodge. Mine was in previous years. I was a Mason already before I got there. And so
I understand what you're saying.
Right. I know. I'm just trying to do it to where the rest of the world doesn't understand too much what I'm saying. But, you know, I was ready before I ever approached the door. And without having those conversations, we won't know that. And you're a perfect example of why we need to have those conversations, because we do have so many brothers that are not Masons, and they're members, and they don't feel the same way. They don't hold our fraternity in such high regard as you do. So they're not going to covet those priorities like you have. Mm-hmm. And hopefully like Justin, I know Justin has it, and I do as well. And so that's where we as the brothers fail our own fraternity, in my opinion, is we don't make sure and seek that out and understand who that person is when they walk into the door before we give them a petition and make them a member.
You know, you said years ago that your dad or granddad could go to the bank and get a loan based solely because he's a Master Mason. And back in, I'd say probably 50 years ago, if you were not a Master Mason, you didn't get anywhere in life, you know. So a lot of people, our fraternity really grew after World War II, okay? Because, well, you have a lot of these guys coming back from war, trying to find a place to fit in. Hey, the Freemasons sounds good. And if you want to get anywhere in life, wear the ring. Be a ring thumper. Let people see that ring on you. Or what does that ring mean? I don't know. Leave me alone. You know? It's got to mean something.
Right.
You can't be a ring thumper.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You talked about our weaknesses a little bit ago. You were talking about the lack of attendance and what is often perceived as aging membership. How can we correct that?
Viagra? I don't know. No, son, you know, the... People.
Oh my goodness.
I shouldn't say I people. But yeah, we claim that our laggy Dennis, I'm not gonna be able to talk unless you put a bag over your head.
Wish you laugh like that at my jokes, God. Dennis.
Yeah. I wish you were that funny, Justin. Oh shit.
So anyhow, what was your question? What do we do to correct that?
Yes.
What can we do to get people more interested in coming to lodge? Back in the day, and once again, quoting your granddad, you know, one day a month, we would take the buggy into town, and I would stay in town and go to lodge, and at night, I would lead the wagon home with a lantern so that the mule wouldn't stumble.
Wow.
You know, but it was important for him to be at lodge that one day a month. Now, what was it that brought him there? The fellowship, the brotherhood. Guys, we can offer anything that you want to offer to anybody, but if they're not welcomed, if they don't feel welcomed, they're not going to come back. If they don't feel like there's actually something in the fraternity that they can get from it, they're not going to come back. We had two brothers, actual biological brothers, that joined our lodge. Very intelligent people. The first one went through all of his work like in 3 months. Wasn't a competition. I tried to get him slow down. He just, that kind of guy. He just super smart. His brother came home from the Marine Corps, joined the lodge. Brother number one conferred all 3 degrees, did all the lectures and everything. That's just wow. That kind of guy. And I was so proud to have those two because I've known the family all my life. They've since demitted. What can we do to get that quality of person to come back? Pat them on the back, shake their hand.
What was the lodge offering at that time? So you're talking about highly intelligent people, right? What was the lodge offering to really satiate that outside? I mean, the specific brother you're talking about, I know who you're talking about, very intelligent guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was being challenged with the memory work. I mean, still, it didn't sound like it was being very challenged, but there was a challenge, right? And then he turns into work. What's next? Where's the challenge after that? We're not intellectually challenging him. We're not encouraging. He fell for the bait and switch, right? He turned into work, and then there's nothing. There's nothing for him at that point. There's no personal development. There's no education. There's no growth. There's no reflection. Why would he stay? He can't prop up the entire organization by himself, nor should he. Should he?
Right? And it goes back to what Dennis was saying earlier. When we interview a candidate, maybe we ought to have an addition to our questionnaire. What do you expect to gain? What do you expect to learn? What do you want from us? And
those are good questions.
I don't know. I really don't know. It was different for me. For me, it took having my son and my brother join. And I mean, it just reopened a door that I should have been passing through a long time before. But life happens.
You know, Justin and I had talked about it before that it would be a good idea to have a questionnaire to give that new person once we've decided that, okay, this person is worth having a petition. Let's give this questionnaire and see what his real values are, what he's wanting from the fraternity so that we could align him with people within our lodge to be mentors that would be able to cultivate what that person is looking for. Mm-hmm. And if we lose all of our leaders, our real leaders within our communities and beyond, then we have nobody to mentor these people that live on a higher level of expectation. And I'm not saying that they're any better than anybody else or anything like that, but they're just so goal-driven that they expect to keep company with people that are going to help them elevate their own game and elevate themselves so that they can accomplish the next challenges in life. And I think a lot of that comes with the idea of what you said earlier, that back in the day, if you wanted to get somewhere in life, you had a ring. That's how you got there. And so people that come in that are high functioning people, and they have those expectations, and then they realize there's nobody that's going to help them build themselves up any higher, then they'll just walk away because they don't want to waste their time. Because like one of the lessons we learn in masonry, time is short, life is short, and our days are numbered, and we got one go at it. So our most valuable asset is time. And if somebody's wasting our time, then we need to put that energy into something else. Just like you said before, if I guarantee you, if you weren't doing masonry, you'd be hanging out with the family. You know, that's where you believe your time is best spent. And so it, even if it's not family for these guys or fellowship, they're going to be spending their time doing with what they think is going to help them achieve what they want in life with such short a time that we have to do it. So I think that could be a big part of it.
Yeah, I understand. You know, and spending time with your family is important. I stay on Justin quite regularly because, to me, his family is more important than the fraternity. You know, my family is more important than fraternity, and you should be that way too. I've seen your wife and daughter. They're precious. Okay. But we do have to decide what's best for ourselves. We're grown men. You know, I can't tell Justin what to do no more than I could tell you. You know, there's this thing I heard about whispering good counsel in somebody's ear, but if that ear is full of mustard, it doesn't do much good. I'm not saying your ears are full of mustard, son.
What?
But yeah. Sound like your kids. The brothers that I was talking about who came through, very intelligent boys, and you know, a family that I highly respect. And I was so afraid that brother number one was going to reach an early plateau where what is there left for me after this? Well, Blue Lodge, unless you want to do the certificate programs or wait for somebody to die off that's holding a district position, not much.
Right, or go join the appendant bodies. Yeah. The one thing, though, is that, like we've already touched on, it being, you know, a season of opportunity, it might be a good time to make that call and say, hey, I'm just curious as to why you walked away.
I'm going to do that.
Because now would be the perfect time to invite them back and say, hey, we've got some new ideas on what we want to do in Lodge. And if that's what they're in alignment with, they may be the perfect people to come in and help you get some of that stuff done.
I'm going to reach out to them. And there's another brother that, Coy, that I hold in high regard. And, you know, these are kids that I I went to school with their parents. Okay, so
wow, nice.
They're good people, and they're the kind of men that are the foundation behind our fraternity. But you gotta put them in their, not put them in their spot. You've got to cement them into that foundation.
Well,
right.
But it can't just be wherever you want them. It's got to be what fits them.
Yes.
I think a lot of them.
Stone that was thrown away.
Yeah. I think a lot of them kind of are like I was when I left. They know there's more to it, right? And you have some of them that they're not gone. They just don't come, right? They still have their finger on the pulse of the lodge. They're still in the group chats. They're still listening. They still ask questions, but they're just not coming. And I think it's because I think they want to, but then they come and it's like, this is what I left for. It's not really anything different. So we have to get in the habit of offering those things. We have to, it has to be more than business meeting. It has to be more than your minutes. It has to be more than like chili dogs and things like that. It has to be something worth going to. It has to, because I can sit at home and eat a chili dog, right? I can eat a Walmart cupcake at home. It needs to be about creating experience that has value. It needs to provide more value than I would get if I sat at home with my kids watching a movie with them or something like that. It needs to be something like there needs to be something that actually justifies me leaving my family after work for 2 or 3 hours on a weeknight, because when I come home, I'm a better man for it, and they benefit in the long run.
Wow. You sure you're my son? That sounded really good.
He's a blind hog every once in a while.
No, that was really good, Justin.
I try.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that it's especially applicable with goal-driven people. If we're not running our lodges with intention,
mm-hmm.
and we're not, you know, and if we're running our lodge with intention, we're going to have those things. We're going to have a nice meal. We're going to have a structured agenda to where we can throw in that education and it's not going to drag out all night long. We're going to be able to accomplish all the things that we want to get done. When we live an intentional life with our mm-hmm. lodge, then we will be ready to accept these brothers back in that may have just walked away because we just weren't intentional with what we were doing. We were just flying by the night, seeing, you know, how we were going to do it next month. And we'll try this or we'll try that, instead of saying, okay, we're going to do this, see it to completion,
mm-hmm.
and focus on the data we get from it. And I think, if it was positive or not.
I think those goals through
the meeting was painless as possible. Yeah.
Well, those goals, mm-hmm. Sometimes it has to be painful, but those goals are what's important. You have to, and that's what gets people to come, because people get behind goals. Your goal for your meeting can't be just to get through it, right? This is what my goal is for this meeting, and this is how I want to accomplish it. You are elected as worshipful master. I'm not saying you specifically, but as a worshipful master, you're elected to lead. So lead, damn it, right? Lead that lodge, because that's what they voted you to do. I know of one lodge where they were talking about the Resolution 9, and it's the same guys that show up for, it's the same handful of guys, and they voted the table so they could send a letter out to everybody. Why? The people that show up are the people that are there.
Right.
Like they're afraid to make a decision. Like they elected leadership that is afraid to actually lead their lodge and make decisions. We can't.
Well, we didn't table it, but
no. I'm not talking about.
I wanted to give them an informed discussion, and before we put it into our rules.
Well, we had district deputy, and I mean, it makes total sense to put it off because you had district deputy and all that going on. But also to that point, that also applies to the year as a worship master. Your goal can't be, and again, I'm not talking about you because I know you're a worship master, but the goal can't be just to keep the charter, right? That's not a goal. That's the same thing as like trying to survive
was the worst thing I've ever heard anybody say.
Yeah, I've heard
it. My job is to keep the charter. That's my number one job.
No, it's to elevate your lodge.
No.
That should be an end result of all the great work that you do. It's just going to stay there.
You got to have a goal.
We have a past master who thought his goal was to get our charter pulled.
Oh, my goodness.
No, we'll go there.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you the truth. I'll tell you about him one day.
That's why I was saying it's kind of hard to embrace them all as brothers sometimes. But
there's people still trying to get Austin 12s, and so there's still issues there trying to get resolved, even though it was all dropped. But there's still people that somehow in their little mind they think that, you know, the old rules still apply, and they get to threaten people with unfounded.
Well, we'll remind them next January.
I'm going to remind them a lot sooner than that.
A couple of thoughts here. I have three topics I want to touch on before you throw me off here. First of all, have y'all talked about Resolution 9 so that your listeners know what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. All right. Second thing is, I believe that as members of Grand Lodge, we should have a resolution that there's a statute of limitation as to when you could bring Masonic charges up on somebody. Okay? Waiting 2 years is ridiculous. I'm just saying. And the third thing is, once those charges are brought up, Grand Lodge has whatever you want to call it, 90 days to dispense of these charges one way or the other. Have some brothers to form a committee, you know, a special investigative committee to examine Masonic charges against lodges and brothers. I'll be on it. I don't care. But let's get this over and done and not use it as political weaponry. Back to you.
Well, some of the resolutions that were passed in January were with that intent. I think maybe you're talking in the broader sense, but there were definitely some resolutions.
Similar, they're similar, but not exactly.
Yeah.
Well, there's not a statute of limitation as to when it can be, when the alleged occurrence took place, and when or how long you have before you can bring Masonic charges. Okay. They're all civil. All of these things would be civil. So 2 years is in Texas covers civil law. Okay.
I say that's fair.
Yeah. And then once said and done, you have a right to a fast and speedy trial, fair and speedy trial. 90 days. Come on, get it over with. Let's not use this as nonsense anymore.
Yeah.
Right. I agree. That's, you know, in fact, there's people that are thinking about charges against people from last year, but they're thinking that they're going to have to wait a couple of years before they can do that. Actually, almost 3 years before they can do that, because the people that'll be in office will not accept the charges against those people. And in my opinion, if you have something that is so important that you need to file charges on somebody, any grandmaster should be able to see it, recognize it, and say, yeah, that guy's got to go. We got to put him through trial immediately. Not because you're absolutely right. If it's holding over 2 years to have anything done with it, it's really more of some type of a political purpose of some sort.
Masonic limbo.
Yeah.
Well, it was held over for 2 years so that you could have somebody actually accept it.
Right. Right. So that's if what they did is not bad enough that somebody would immediately accept it, then it shouldn't even be on the table. And it's kind of how I feel about what happened with all these charges that were dropped this year. You know, every one of them came under pressure, right? But every one of them were dropped. So that tells me that not one of them was serious enough to really get that person kicked completely out of Freemasonry. So in my opinion, those are BS charges and should have never been drawn up.
I can't agree more.
And it's not just because of the people that it is. It's just because of the way that it happened. If you think that somebody is deserving of charges to where they need to be removed from the fraternity, get it done. Because if they are, then whoever's on the other side of that who receives that Form 1 and looks at it, they're immediately going to say, oh, man, this is bad, and immediately put it into motion. Or they're going to say, man, this is not worth ruining a man's life over.
True.
Let's whisper counsel and be done with it.
There's so many Master Masons who are former law enforcement, okay? If Grand Lodge were to say, hey, we are forming this a committee, and you guys are special investigators, you handle these complaints received by the Grand Secretary, and you go look at them, and you go through, even if it's a lodge that, you know, somebody wants to have their charter arrested, have somebody examine it that doesn't have a dog in the fight.
Yes,
you know,
I agree.
And then whatever that investigator says, yay or nay, that's the end of it right there. It's up to the Grand Master to decide that.
Yes, I'm down. I like that.
All right, I like you, Grand Master.
let's go into final thoughts. Dad, you want to go first? Just share whatever's on your mind after our conversation.
I'm sorry. Are you talking to me?
Yes.
What'd you say?
Final thoughts. You know, share whatever's on your mind after our conversation.
You know, I appreciate the opportunity to come here, and I hope I wasn't an embarrassment to you or to anybody who's listening, and I hope I didn't say anything that would cause any harm to our great and noble fraternity. You know, we go back, our fraternity goes back to the earliest writings about Freemasonry is, I believe it's the year 1300, or maybe 1303. And at that, that writing is actually talking about the history of Freemasonry up to that point. So it tells you how historic this fraternity really is. Now, you know, did we originate from the Templars, or Templars originate from us? Did we truly originate from the building of Solomon's Temple? Don't know. But you'll never find another fraternity like it, ever, anywhere in the world. And I'm proud to be a member.
Very good.
Very nice.
So I'll just say, this has been an interview that's been a long time coming. Whenever you hear... I follow a lot of podcasts and Masonic stuff, and whenever they start bringing on their wives or their dads or something, from the outside looking in, you're always like, oh, that guy must be running out of gas or something. But that's not the case. No, I mean, we got quite a lineup. And so that's why I always kind of, it's like, I don't want people to think we're like running out of gas, but on the same note, like, I mean, I am the guy I am today. I was shaped by you as a father, right? And so I wanted to be, and time's not always on our side. And so I was like, I really would have hated it if I put it off, and then God forbid something happened, and then never had that opportunity to have you on the show, because this puts it, I mean, this immortalizes the conversation. And like I said, hopefully one day one of my sons will, or both will become Masons, and hopefully you're still around. But if you're not, they might want to know who was granddad. What was he, who was he as a Mason?
How he felt as
how, Mason. How he felt as a Mason, right? It just gives them the opportunity to listen one day, or watch it on a hologram or VR goggles or whatever they, who knows by the time they're old enough to join, what things will be like. But this puts it out there. I mean, I'm sure they still know the crazy guy that I did my podcast with, but maybe the one, what was Dennis like when he was young? Well, and I'll say, well, he wasn't young, kids, but this is what he was like back in the day.
Well, I do want to clarify something before Dennis, closes out his part. When I said that I am not Batman, okay, I'm Superman. I just got to wear this so people don't chase me down the street. All right. Go ahead, Dennis.
I actually have a Superman shirt that I would wear underneath my suit, and sometimes I would unbutton and do that up at Lodge. Yeah. But anyways,
I bet you did.
I did. I still have the glasses too.
Oh gosh!
So, all right. Final thoughts. Well, first and foremost, I'm grateful that you came on the show. And I am, for several reasons. And it's not just because you made Justin. We all have our messed up piece of stone that finally turns into something nice, right?
Yeah, a rough basher.
Yes, yes. But the reason I'm so glad you came on the show is because I know that you are a very conservative person at heart. And so while you support a lot of the things that have happened in this past Grand Lodge, I know that you don't support them like Justin and I. You're not, just all in, let's take advantage of Resolution 9 and let's do all these things. I know that by your personality that you're more conservative than that. And
I am reserved. Yes.
Yes. And you care more about the strength and honor of our fraternity than many brothers do. Not that I'm saying that I don't feel that same way or Justin, because I definitely try to do everything within due bounds so that we can hold our head up high when we're walking down the street and somebody recognizes us as a Mason. But we hadn't had anybody on the show since January that represents that group of Masons that feels the way you do, and the group that we really, a lot of us thought would be against our newer ideas to help shape this fraternity. But in all reality, it was you and the brothers that you grew into Freemasonry with that really shaped this year. Some of us just stuck our neck out to try to push things along, but it was you guys that showed up. Y'all came in and took care of business because and you
didn't
knew
they show up too. Gosh.
Yes. Yes. It was by time election started, there were 3,500 votes to be had. When Grand Lodge first opened, there was 3,000 votes, a little over 3,019 votes to be had between the lodges and the members. And by time on Saturday, after we got Resolution 10 going and everybody thought there was going to be a trial, Saturday morning there was 3,300 registered voters. And then Saturday afternoon, by time the election started, it was like 3,500. People just kept coming in and coming in and coming
I've
in.
Never seen that many people there.
I know it. And it wasn't guys like us. We were few and far between. It was the mentor generation that was there that decided, look, we've had enough of this. We're going to make sure that we have something that our young Masons can work with and take us into the future with. And I could not be prouder of our mentor generation. And I couldn't be more humbled by the fact that I was wrong in thinking that there was a difference in our mindset just because you're a little more reserved than I am. Because ultimately we all felt the same, and and it shows in the votes. When it's 2,700 to 200 some odd votes, I mean, that's a statement.
That's what they call a landslide. That's the definition of a landslide.
Well, and that's one after another. Those 200 votes were cemetery votes. So.
right. And you know, that's where the motion started. And then it just grew from there. There was only a couple of elections that were close, but everything else was a landslide, especially all the resolutions. They were all very one-sided, and you could tell who was doing it, and it was you guys. And so, like I've done in the previous podcast here lately, I do want to apologize to you personally, because you are representative of what many brothers think are out of touch when you're not. You do have your hand on the pulse. You do care about what's going on. And I know that you're trying to figure this out just like we are. And I'm grateful that you're here doing this with us and showing everybody that, you know, we can all take advantage of technology. We can all share that fellowship together to make this a better culture for Texas, and not just for ourselves. So I'm grateful for you coming on the show, and for all of our listeners out there. If you feel like you've been on an island out there, you know, we all come from that. Even Dad Jones, he comes from an island feeling when he became a master. He left for a while because he just felt like the lodge wasn't offering what he came into masonry for. We all get that feeling. And that's why Justin and I are here, are to help you understand that you're not alone. And there's no better time than now than to get back into your lodge and get active, because the cultures are shifting. And it's not just in Texas. They're shifting all around the world. We've got people with their eyes on us at all times in Texas now. And you're starting to make the difference. As you show that we can do this right, all it's doing is reinforcing the same thing in other states. So get back in your lodge, get active, and make a difference, because we're all in it together. And it's going to take every one of us, and it's going to take a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get there. And we've got, now is a time that we just suck it up and get it done, because our fraternity needs us.
If we showed up at our lodges like we showed up at Grand Lodge, could you imagine how much we'd get done in this year?
Oh my goodness.
We'd know who's bringing the next meal. No, it's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. And I'm sorry it stole your thunder there, son.
You're absolutely right.
So good.
Absolutely right.
Well, guys, I appreciate y'all having me on. I'm sorry I kept you up so late. I know some of you have to get up and go to work in the morning. But you know, I just if somebody knows what the secret is to success and for our fraternities and for getting our brothers to come back, don't be bashful. Share it with us, you know, because all of our lodges, we have 40 members, and only about 8 or 10 are active, you know.
Most lodges right are there.
The same way.
25%. That's 25% of them active right there.
Well, that's fine, but I want 100%. Well, okay, I'm worse for master.
You might have to meet at the nursing home then.
And
I'll
go out to cemetery. But you know, I'm worse for master, and you're both past masters as well. And there's worshipful masters out there and past masters who were listening to this and people who are going through the chairs. If you figure it out, don't be bashful. Share it. And I'm just going to close and say thank y'all so very much, and God bless you, and God bless Texas.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone, for listening in, and see y'all.
Keep it between the points.
My fingers aren't as long as they used to.